With today, Quinquagesima Sunday, we come to the last of the Sundays of the Septuagesima season. As I mentioned to you a couple of weeks ago, this is the shortest of all the liturgical seasons that the church gives to us in the course of the year. But nevertheless, even though it is the shortest, that doesn't mean that it's not full of meaning itself. The purpose behind the season of Septuagesima is to prepare us for the Lenten season coming up, not only to take us down, if you will, from Christmas and the Epiphany, the joys and all the thoughts that come to us during that time, but to get our hearts and souls ready for Lent, the Lenten observance, the resolutions that we mentioned and talked about making here by praying to the Holy Ghost and our guardian angel, to help us to know what resolutions that we could make that will help us to actually improve in areas during our Lenten observances. And this is not only going to be just in avoiding things or overcoming sin and temptation, but also the practice of virtue that takes place, developing good habits, building up good habits. See, our spiritual life shouldn't just be something that it's negative, thou shalt not, but also what shall we do? What can we accomplish? What will we fulfill? And so that's what we do here. This is what we work toward here in the season of Lent for that particular purpose, to find if we are particularly troubled or tried with any particular bad habits or vices or sins in our lives. Let's say, for example, someone's given over to anger in a particular life. Well, this is the time for you to practice humility and meekness of heart and soul and all my actions. And in that particular way, to gain an upper hand on that angry spirit by substituting for it that gentle spirit, the humble spirit, and the good habit that comes from that by developing that virtue, more and more starts to put the rest, the other problems. The same thing as it is with other vices or temptations we can come up. We work to develop the other virtue here that's opposite the particular thing that we know we need to conquer. And by the grace of God, we know that we can more and more, bit by bit. Anyway, that's the purpose, the idea behind the Septuagesima season, is for us to prepare for Lent in that way, so that we know from the first day of Lent, we're ready. We're ready to practice the spiritual things that we need, so all the graces that come to us will be there, not only in abundance, because we know they will be, but they'll be in abundance in our own souls, and we'll make proper use of them and make the progress that the church wants us to make during this season by giving us this holy season of Lent as we prepare for Easter. As part of our Septuagesima thoughts, 2 weeks ago I proposed the question of what your attitude was towards sin. And it's something to continue to think about, not just for last Sunday, but it's something we need to keep our thought in mind. God created us as self-reflecting, thinking beings, where we can go back and think upon the things that we have in our minds and hearts and things like that and go, okay, so if I'm there, what attitude do I have towards sin? Hopefully in the past couple of weeks, you've been able to answer that question better and better for yourself. That either I see that sin is the greatest evil in all things that I could ever have in life, or I substitute evils for something else, not having a job, not having enough money, some friends abandon me, other problems here and there that can take place. And I might substitute those and say those are the greater evils in life, and I've made a compromise with sin. Sin is something that, well, it's there, it happens, and I can always go to confession later on. If I take the attitude towards sin that it's the greatest evil, then I will combat against it right away and thus be more pleasing to God. So that becomes one thing, not just from couple of Sundays ago, but even during Lent, that I'm focused at that particular point. That if I have sinned and fallen into sin, then why? What is my attitude toward and what can I do to change it? Last week I talked about, or they had the question of taking the attitude towards suffering. Do you see suffering as something that is coming from God, as a gift from God, or is it something that is a punishment that you're trying to try and run away from? It's something that you're ready to be angry at, vexed at yourself for all the crosses and trials and sufferings that go on. Make everybody else feel that you're angry because of all the trials you go through. Or do you see in any cross and trial that comes along that it does come from God to actually strengthen us, to make us better through that? Through the mortification that comes with suffering well spent, we can get on top of ourselves and actually start to be able to practice the good virtues again and overcome vice in our lives. So again, that question is important. What is my attitude towards suffering? Something to run away from? It too is a great evil? Or do I see it in the Christian spirit that it's a gift from God? Today I want to propose an idea of another question that I hope will carry us through all the way during the season of Lent, not just then, even the rest of our lives, because it's very important. But it's another aspect of our preparation, and it is, I want to ask about the motives we have. We're self-reflecting people. which means that we can go back and discover within ourselves what's going on. We can think within ourselves what makes us tick. And so the question comes up, what is your motive when you come and pray your prayers or come today to attend Mass? Why? What was your motive behind it? If you don't know, if you come say, I don't know if I had a motive or not, I'm not sure, you're in trouble. Because we're, as human beings, we're supposed to walk from act from a motive for everything we do. How about if I say, well, I'm here only because I had to. Children against their parents or some other people, they're forcing me to come here for Mass. Okay, if that's my motive, that's a good one, but it's a motive there. How about by habit? Some people will say, well, I'm just here because I just always do this on Sunday. I always come, sit in the same pew, say prayers, follow along, go to communion, go home, get involved with things, go back to work. I just got a habit in my life. And on it goes. How about, some people, when you ask them, what's your motive for coming for Mass on Sundays? Do you come here just to see people? It's a social event. A social event to the point I get all dressed up and things like that. Can't wait till I see these people, all smiles and nice and things like that. And then go back on with my day. Can't wait till I have the next social event that'll come up at work or other things that can take place with it. Life becomes one particular point of social events, and Mass is no different. Is my motive because I want to please God? And that would be a good motive, obviously. It's a supernatural motive compared to the rest. But it may not be complete in what we're looking for. Let's take another idea of this, looking at motives. With Lent coming up, what is going to be your motive that is going to help you, assist you, to keep with the practices of Lent? Again, no motive at all. We're not being a very good human being if we say we have no motive at all. Because we always act from some type of a motive. That's the way we are. Again, are we doing it because I must do it? Lent's going to be for me a ball and chain. I have to observe these things. And so I'm going to struggle with it every day of the 40 days. And I can't wait till Sunday comes. And then how about maybe another motive? Is it just a habit? And when I start out, I just make a habit of things. Breakfast here, lunch this, pray these prayers, do that. Stations of the Cross on Friday, come for Mass on Sunday. Maybe pray the rosary a few more times. I just make a habit of it. Or maybe another motive there, I'm doing it to please God. Again, a supernatural motive, but is it always the best? See, most of the motives I've described right here are either no motives at all or natural ones. And for fulfilling or following the natural motives, we're going to receive a natural reward. But we're here in this life to have supernatural motives for what we do, supernatural reasons for the things that we're here to accomplish. Now, when I say I'm doing something to please God, it is a supernatural motive because I've introduced God into my reasoning behind doing that. But what I want to reflect upon is that it's not enough. It's not going to be enough of a motive to keep me going in the proper spirit all the time, in my prayers, attending Mass, the Lenten observances. Human nature being what it is, if I'm only doing something to please another, when I think the other one is no longer within my eyesight or I forget about a particular individual whom I'm trying to please, then I don't do it for that motive anymore. That motive just goes away. There's a bit of selfishness attached to it. Even though doing things for pleasing God is a good motive to get started with as we do our spiritual life and start to make progress toward it, we can't keep it all the time because it's not going to be sufficient for us to keep strong all the time, to keep our resolutions. To not just make a resolution and 2 days later, it's gone. We give it up. We do that, we get that weak because the best motive, the perfect motive, the ideal motive, the one you and I can always not only strive for but actually practice, is to do these things, prayer, attend Mass, or Lenten devotions and so forth, all these things here for the love of God, not just to please Him, but because I love God. And we start with the fact if He smiles down on me from heaven, showing me He's pleased with it, whether I get a warm fuzzy from Him, some sign, something like that, that God is pleased with what I've just done, it doesn't matter. I love God, and I'm doing these things for the love of God, not for the love of myself, not for any other motive or idea. It's for the love of God. It's that very love that helps me, it assists me, it gives a driving point, it gives life to everything I'm doing. Look at people, couples who are in love with each other. When they express they have a love for each other, one of the things, there's a change that takes place in their lives. They will sacrifice for each other, they will help, they will do, they will assist, they'll pray for each other, do many, many different things. But there is that good change that takes place because everything they do for the other, for the beloved one, is out of love. Well, you know, it's high time that we start talking about the idea of being in love with God. Not just saying, I'm going to love God, but actually being in love with him. Oh, Father, you know, that's too human of an idea. Oh, gosh, if only you think that love is something that's carnal and filled with sexual things, you haven't got it yet. You don't understand what love is. You only have a good foundation for good Christian love, much and love of neighbor, much less love of God. When I say we need to be in love with God, that means I'm taking the catechism seriously that says, with my whole heart, my whole soul, my whole mind, all of my heart, everything I have, all that I am, I turn it toward God. Isn't that love? It is. And if I'm supposed to be acting that way as his creature, if this is the way that I must turn myself toward God, then that means to fulfill all those elements perfectly, I must be in love with him. To sacrifice, to go past the things of myself, to do what it takes for to prove my love for him, because I am in love with him. If I don't have that love for God in that sense, then everything will fall apart in my life, guaranteed. Today in the epistle, St. Paul gives us the idea of charity. In the Catholic vocabulary, charity appears several times, you know, in several different ways. Love of neighbor, love of self, love of God. The virtue itself of charity, things of that nature. Today we look at charity as a motive. Doing something out of charity, out of the love of God, the love for God in what we try to accomplish. To the point that if we don't do things for the love of God, we're wasting our time. God put us on this earth not only to love him, to know him, and to serve him, as the catechism says, but also to make a spiritual profit from all the good works that we do. If we don't profit from them, if we don't gain grace and really make those graces build up in our lives, we've wasted our time. We've wasted God's time. And I sure wouldn't want to stand before God in judgment where he points out at this time, and this time, and this time in your life, I gave you these graces and your motive was so poor, so bad, you did not even love me, and so they didn't fit. They didn't stay there. Remember the gospel from last Sunday about the man that took care of a field and putting the seeds out. And our Lord gave the interpretation of that particular parable, that the seed is the grace of God coming into the soul that's ready for such things. And if the seed falls on bad ground where there's no love for God or it's choked out by the love and cares of this world, then nothing grows. But where there is a perfectly formed soul there with the love for God, and it grows in that particular way, then the seed not only grows, but it yields fruit 100-fold. It's that yielding fruit. It's that having that profit before God, like St. Paul mentions today, about these points that if I don't accomplish things for the love of God, I'm not gaining that spiritual profit that I have. God didn't put you and I on this earth just to get to heaven. So that's my only motive for everything I do on life. Gee, as long as I die without mortal sin, it's fine. If I go to purgatory, good enough. Boy, that's terrible language it is for somebody who loves God. Because if I love God, if I really do, if I'm in love with him, then I'm not satisfied in this life just to get by. I'm going to love him in everything and want to strive in everything I can to be with him, but not only be with him in heaven, but in the highest parts of happiness that he has prepared for me that I can gain by using his grace as well. That's the profiting from it. It's not enough to have the state of grace, but to profit of grace, build it upon grace, and merit grows, a treasure chest of us that we have in heaven. That upon our death, yes, everyone in heaven is happy, but there's a greater accidental happiness, as the philosophers call it, when we're in a higher degree of glory and happiness. Jesus tells us, in his Father's house there are many mansions. And if I love God, then my striving is to be in the upper mansion, because that's what God wants me to do. He wants that my joy is full, not just part way, but full. And we do that, we accomplish that when I start to profit from the grace of God. And I profit from it when my motive behind my actions are for the love of God and not some other inferior motive. St. Paul gives us the example, and gives us many examples in today's epistle about that. His language is quite clear. You know, I think many of us have read this epistle so many times over the years. And maybe it impresses us. Some people, I've seen, you can go through these airport little gift shop type things, and on there it'll be this very epistle from St. Paul. Charity is patient, charity is kind. And so you buy it and stick it up on your wall and say, I'm charitable because I've got that thing on my wall. That makes me charitable now because the wall says so. I don't understand the message. The message of it is, I have to do some things here for the love of God. If I have the tongues of men and of angels, it means that I can speak wonderful and high things, learned and everything like that, very pious and holy, like the angels themselves would say. But if I don't have charity, I don't have the love of God behind me as I do that, I'm just a sounding brass, a tinkling cymbal. Somebody going around ringing a bell for no good reason. Or St. Paul gives another example. He said, if I could prophesy, if I have know all mysteries, if I have every bit of knowledge that there is, if I can have faith so much that I could even move a mountain, because Satan, being an angel, could even help me to accomplish that. If I could have that type of thing but have not charity behind it, it profits me nothing. I've wasted my time. If I should distribute all my goods to the poor and even give my body up to be burned, St. Paul says, if I do not have charity, it profits me nothing. Let that penetrate in. Because it's not good enough just to do good works. Even if I say I'm not doing it for the warm and fuzzy, I'm doing these good works here because they should be done. If I'm doing it for some less than good supernatural motive, I gain no supernatural reward. I could go work in a food line at some poor place and give food to the poor and do all that. I could write out a check to some pious organization. But if I don't have charity, the love of God behind any of the things I do, then before God, I get nothing. I will accomplish giving the check. I'll accomplish working the food line. I can do the warm and fuzzies that come from that, but that's not where God is. It's giving these things for the love of God. Jesus tells us so much in one part of the gospel where he says, it's not so much the giving of the cup of cold water. So someone was thirsty, he said, but giving the cup of cold water in my name. That's where the reward comes from. What that means is that you and I must consciously think, not just work from habit, consciously think, why am I doing this? What motivates me today? What will motivate me to go through the trials and difficulties of this day? To make it through the things that I work or at school, trials that happen at home. What will motivate me to do that? The only thing that will make me through and still maintain my peace of heart and soul is if I have the highest motive for the love of God. Because I will endure these things for the love of Him. Because I do love Him. I am in love with Him. He sends me these trials, and I love that fact. I love Him for them. And boy, what a change it makes in our lives. One of the reasons why we don't profit, we don't advance like we should, we don't understand or to at least practice this idea of doing things for the love of God, why our motives become less pure, as it's said by the spiritual writers, is because our interior life here is not as it should be. Oh, but Father, I pray. I come to Mass, I receive communion, try to get rid of distractions and do that. So that gives me an interior life, doesn't it? No. Part of it, a little bit toward that. But the interior life, an actual life, in which everything is governed by the interior, by the love of God. Not only is God present with me in His sanctifying grace, but I turn to Him and talk to Him and worship Him here. Grace builds upon grace in my soul. More and more, the peace of heart and soul that comes, that I really have determined I want to be holy. I've listened to the words of Jesus that says, you are to be perfect, and I'm going to make that happen in my life. I'm not going to compromise anymore. I'm not going to let the world take over for me. Oh, but Father, that's too hard. Being holy, that's for nuns, that's for priests, that's for other people. That's for older people. After they've retired from work, they come to Mass more often, be holy, and they can get that little halo around their head. For me, well, my halo is a little bit kind of crooked here, or it's kind of falling down my head over my shadow. No. That's not it. Holiness is for all of us. we can all accomplish it, but it has to come with a desire to build up a life within me, an interior life that looks more to the things of God, finding peace and comfort there than I do with all the external things in the world surrounding me. That interior life is the very thing that helps when God sends his graces to me, that I accept them well. It's from that interior life that I'm always going to give the proper good motive in all of my actions that I do. If you're a gardener, you have a garden, you're going to put this little garden in the back part of your yard, and you're going to use that so you can start growing your own vegetables. It's good for you, it's healthy, it's cost-wise going to be a little more efficient, things of that particular nature. So you're ready, you're going to grow your own food. So you just, what you're going to do is going to say, okay, it's going to be that little square part of land here. That's where we're going to do it. I'm just going to kind of cut around it, get the weeds out of there, throw a little bit of water, throw some seeds up on top, and then it'll all grow, right? Now, if anybody here is a gardener, you know, you've got to till the soil. You've got to put fertilizer in it. You're going to work. And even after you planted the seed, it still takes a lot of work to keep it going. The garden of our souls, that's the interior life, takes work. It takes a work that a lot of people don't want to accomplish, mainly because they are not in love with God. They're in love with themselves. They're not in love with God. In loving themselves, they fall into sins. In loving themselves, they make excuses for sin. In loving for themselves, they make excuses. If it's not sin, faults and failings, well, they're not sins themselves, not that bad. That kind of person is not in love with God, and any interior life, well, it's that land that's choked with seeds, with weeds and things like that, on hard ground where seeds can't grow. God sends the seeds of his grace to our souls. And if we have that fertile ground in here, they grow, they multiply, bringing forth fruit and patience, as we learned in last week's epistle, or gospel, rather. These are the ways that things that work with the points of God. This is what it means that if we will really work toward the end here of pleasing God, loving him, we will develop an interior life, and it's that interior life that's so important. This is why, if you saw the poster coming into church today, my Lenten theme is going to be on the interior life, working to build up the interior life. I can just, some people saying, well, that's some Lenten sermons I'm not going to go to because it'll be boring. I'm sorry it would be. I'm sorry some people have that attitude toward it. For the past few years, I've given Lenten sermons on the Stations of the Cross, on the sufferings of Christ, the five sorrowful mysteries, the rosary, the sorrows of Mary, various things like that. If we were all moved by those sufferings, and many people at the end of all the wonderful sermons, Father, really helping, I can see where Jesus is suffering, I'm so sorry for my sins. And then given human nature, some of these same people after a few weeks will just fall right back into the same sins. The thoughts of the sorrows of Jesus, the sufferings he went through, the excruciating agony that he had, all of those things did nothing to move the heart and soul. It moved the emotion, but it didn't move the heart and soul. And it didn't because God gave the grace to work with that, but the interior life was not as it should be. So when we have that reflection upon the sufferings of Jesus, that could carry us through the rest of our lives, really make changes in our lives right now here today, there's no fertile ground for them to capitalize on. And so they come up and we just quickly forget about them within a few days. And our resolutions fail. And it isn't until next Lent, oh gosh, yes, Jesus suffered so much for me. I've got to be sorry for all these sins. It's all built on emotion. The fertile ground of an interior life is not there. That's why this year we're going to make up for that. This year we're going to reflect upon the interior life. And I pray you all see the importance of working this direction, not only for the Lenten sermons on Wednesday evenings, but also from time to time on Sunday sermons too, to develop what is weakest in all of us, the interior life, the giving things for God, the being in love for God, with God rather, and all the things that we think, say, and do. That's where we're weakest. And because we're weak in that way, we profit nothing, and our resolutions fail. Maybe a really good example to go along with this before I conclude. This Wednesday is Ash Wednesday. As you know, we're going to receive ashes upon our foreheads. As you see from the catechism, because they're blessed ashes, they are sacramentals at that point. They're to be treated in some way that's holy. They can be productive of many graces and assist us in a great manner. That's why we have ashes on our forehead, so we can receive those graces before we start the Lenten season and be ready to perform the sacrifices and penances in that spirit for the love of God. If I don't have that love of God when I receive the ashes, I get nothing. Oh, you'll get ashes on your forehead. Congratulations. But you get nothing as far as grace goes. The catechism teaches us about sacramentals. And this is why so many people have all these rosaries and medals and statues and this and that. But if they don't use them for the love of God, they're productive of no graces. With a sacramental, you get out of it what you put into it. If you don't put into it faith and love and desire to please God even more by using this sacramental, you get nothing out of it but a nice pretty picture, a rosary. Look at this medal I got. Wasn't this a great medal? I found it someplace. It's really fantastic. No. Prophets mean nothing. Ash Wednesday, the time to profit from grace, from the very moment, the first moments of Lent, we can either grow in grace or just have a smear of ashes on our foreheads and just say, look at me, I got ashes. Doesn't work. If I want to grow in grace, I must do it for the love of God. Sacramentals must be used for that purpose. Ashes must be received with that intention in mind, or we get nothing, nothing from it. My prayer today is that we all understand that more and more. Understand the importance of an interior life, that it's something that all of us needs to build and rebuild, and that Lent is all about that. That will reflect upon the interior life, what it means, how to grow in it. What are the signs of my growing in interior life? What can I do to help it grow within me? All these things and more we're going to be reflecting on during Lent. And my prayer for all of us is that we will have that appreciation for the interior life and make this Lent the holiest one we've ever spent. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost. Amen.